We'll get back to your phone calls in just a moment, but we are joined by a man that should be in the Hall of Fame, and I will continue to say that until my last breath. He has 509 home runs in his career. Only 25 players have more than that. He has 1,676 runs driven in. Only 29 players have driven in more runs than our guest right now, a man that baseball has taken a back seat because there are bigger issues to be tackled, and that is the great Gary Sheffield. Sheff, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
Sheff, you really had powerful words in print last week on the Players Tribune and shared your experiences and run-ins with police that treated you and your family poorly in 1986. And then as you got older, same thing. You got treated poorly. How emotional was it for you to relive those times and put it in print?
You know, it brought up some old memories, and, I just was just sitting home, and I just started thinking, and I just kept looking at the news and seeing all the bad news just kept happening, and I didn't want my story to just be another story of Powell Line. But I really thought about it, and I wanted to get it out there because I wanted the young people and the older generation to understand too, because I know they've been through a lot, you know, the older generation, and I want them to know when my story started, when my troubles began. When you, as a kid, you think you're doing something positive, you know, you graduated from high school, coming where I'm from, you know, that's a big deal, and having the opportunity to go to any college I wanted to, that's a big deal, and then having to get drafted and doing positive things, and then having to be confronted by cops every time you walk out your house and, you know, harassed and things like that. So it became a frightening situation and dangerous.
How have you been able to keep your cool through those moments as a young person and then as an accomplished adult? How were you able to keep your cool in those moments, and how have you been able to channel your frustrations in a positive way?
Well, you know, it's not easy. That's number one. But it's the way we was raised. We was always raised talking about cops and you know, some, you know, all of them are not bad. Some of them are just to live to see another day. When the cop got a gun and you don't, you know, you don't want to be in those kind of confrontations. But after a while, you know, you just start being numb to it, which is not good because it brings anxiety. It brings, you know, hypertension. It brings a lot of unhealthy things to your body, as well as it brings, you know, things to your mind that you shouldn't be thinking about as a young child, as well as an adult. And, you know, that those are the things that I brought to the major leagues, you know, of my experiences. And when you have people, you know, ask you questions, you know, leading questions, trying to attack you, then what you do best is, you know, you're a fighter, you fight. And that's what, those are the things that I've done my whole career.
I always felt like you spoke your mind and you told the truth. And I always felt like you couldn't win when you spoke the truth. People didn't like it. And as a player, when you don't speak to the media, it seems like you lose that way too.
Well, you know, it was funny because, you know, I remember Eddie Murray going out there and saying, you know, he's not speaking to the media. And it's funny, I see Eddie Murray in the Hall of Fame. And I always felt if I talk to the media, I'm allowing them to do their job. And I'm giving them information about things that most players don't give them because they're not speaking from the heart. They're speaking from a political standpoint, and I never want to get political. I'm going to give it to you exactly the way it went down on the field. So when somebody is talking about, you know, doing an interview with me, they're getting exactly how I felt at that time. And, you know, because a lot of times they would write something and then they would come back the next day and want to rehash it. And I'm done with it at that point. You know, yeah. I'm over it. You know, I've moved on to the next thing, And so they say, well, how do you feel today? Well, I felt that way yesterday, and I feel this way today. And so that's just how it goes.
Yeah, I remember that. Even when you were playing for the Dodgers, they would try to circle back with you and continue to basically pick the scab where they know you were upset.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, it's not always – see, that's the picture they try to paint, is that I'm always upset and all this and that. But, you know, I don't like to just always do interviews based on, you know, confrontation and things like that. I've done a lot of good in my life. And I've done a lot of things to accommodate other people, so I don't have to explain or apologize for nothing I've done. So that's just the way I go about my life.
Yeah, and he's accommodating me. He's accommodated me since he met me the first time in the Dodger clubhouse, the one and only Gary Sheffield. And, you know, Gary, I heard Jimmy Rollins say something as far as his perspective playing baseball and being an African-American player, where there weren't too many guys on his team that could relate to his stories, his experiences. And I do remember you and Marquise Grissom being so gracious, allowing me to just hang with you guys and listen to your conversations. And I remember some of those were the experiences you guys each had in your own lives about being black men, not just black baseball players. How important was it for you to have a guy like that or have somebody else on your team that could relate to you?
Well, it's very important. I mean, the thing is, you would get the most out of those players, you know, when they are comfortable. When you see Latino players come over to the United States, what they do? They try to accommodate them and make them comfortable and have an interpreter. And they have somebody, they have a lot of Latinos on the team. So they feel comfortable. So everybody wants to be comfortable. You know, being white in society today, you walk in a room and you're always comfortable. And so, you know, I remember Eric Karras, you know, came up to me one day when I had that altercation with the Dodgers. And he came up to me and he said, Gary, how do you perform at a high level when 67,000 people are booing you? You know? And I said, the bottom line is, man, you know, I've never cared if a white man liked me. That's just how I've always grew up. I never cared. And I said, but the bottom line is, the bottom line is that, I said, imagine if you was in my shoes. I said, imagine if that was 60,000 black people booing you. You see?
Yeah.
I said, so I have to take my mind somewhere and say to myself, I don't care if you like me. You know, I don't care nothing about how you feel about me. Because what you're doing is you're making it worse for you, because I'm going to perform under these conditions regardless. So, you know, everybody always try to tell me, Gary, soften your stance, calm down, don't talk, and just don't say much to get people riled up. You know, listen, man, some people going to like you, some people going to hate you, and some people don't really care.
Ain't that the truth? Gary Sheffield is our guest, and you can follow Gary on Twitter at Gary Sheffield. You can read his very powerful column at the Players Tribune about his experiences, not only as a young man in 1986, but as an accomplished should-be Hall of Famer in 2015 down there from Tampa to Miami. And Gary, I'm just curious, you now are on national TV during the playoffs for Turner. Do you feel
not anymore?
Not anymore?
No.
Oh man.
Not anymore.
Well, you were, and
yeah, I were.
You had that platform for people to see a different side of you. Do you feel like you have made any headway with these voters as far as the Hall of Fame goes? Because it's incredible that you're not getting the votes you deserve.
Well, you know the thing about me is I'm not gonna sit around and answer those questions every year to campaign for something that I belong in. And the bottom line is that we can sit here and talk about, numbers all day long. You know, there's plenty of people that are sitting on the outside with better numbers with players on the inside. It ain't a slight at them. It's just a fact, you know. But the bottom line is, you know, the numbers match up with Hall of Fame. It's not even a question. so I don't have to question it. So, you know, the bottom line is that if a writer don't like you, they ain't going to vote for you. And if they take it personal, everything is personal. And you just have to roll with the punches. And my life is fine with or without the Hall of Fame.
Gary, in L.A., we all know about Mamba mentality. And Kobe made that popular by him letting people in on where he goes to dominate the way he did on the court. Just in my mind's eye, I'm thinking about you on the baseball field, and you kind of described a little bit where you go into a different place to compete. How intense of a player were you, and when did that start in as far as a pregame preparation?
Well, I my best friend has always tried to get me to tell my real story to the public. And I never really tell them my real story because, you know, it ain't time yet. Because the bottom line is, you know, I was on 8 different teams. I won 1 championship. And the one team that treated me like I felt like I needed to be treated, I brought them a championship. And when other teams say, well, we treated you good, and you didn't bring us a championship, and I beg to differ. Every team I've been on besides the Marlins, I was always underpaid and underappreciated. So you never got the best of Gary Sheffield. And my thing is that I can go to any level on a baseball field, and it's just that when I wasn't taken care of, it was just my soul. Yeah, my soul wasn't in it with those organizations. I couldn't buy into the organization. I wouldn't do anything the organization stood for. I have nothing to do with it because you don't take care of me, I don't take care of you. It's that simple.
How would you characterize your years with the Dodgers? I know Bob Daly didn't treat you that great at the end.
Like I said before, I do the things that's necessary to make sure that I see my family. And that's what I did. I perform, I put up my numbers. And, you know, when I left the Dodgers, I loved the city. But, you know, the people that was working for it at the time didn't serve me well. And, you know, I wound up moving on. So, you know, my thing is that, you know, when people look back on things, nobody never remember what the general manager did or the owner or the manager. They always remember what the player did. So I understand that better than anybody.
Yeah, and you were a victim of circumstance twice in your career where the Padres did a big sell-off, then the Marlins did a big sell-off, and the Dodgers are not the same Dodgers that they are today or were before you got there.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just part of it. You know, nobody, like I said, I don't want to be looked at as a victim and somebody to feel sorry for me. You know, I'm a man about my business. I go about it like a man, and whatever the cards I'm being dealt, I just move accordingly, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, it ain't going to stop me from doing what I got to do. And I've accomplished everything I wanted to on the baseball field. I had a wonderful career when I looked back on it. And, you know, I could be proud of what I did. And so nobody can take it away from me.
Not at all. What you did on the field is what you did on the field. Nobody can ever change that. And one of the pitchers that you tormented just texted me, Chef, Mark Gubiza. He said that you had the best and fastest bat speed he ever faced. So even pitchers listening to this date are having nightmares about you.
Hey, man, you know, the thing was, you know he was a competitor that we've competed for a long time. A lot of years of going out there and going to battle and you know, I always appreciate guys, you know, the old school guys that, you know, played the game the right way. And, you know, we battle on the field and play golf off of it. And that's what it's all about.
No doubt. Gary, I loved watching you play. There was nobody more feared in the league when you were playing than yourself. And I know Griffey was great. Obviously, Bonds was great. But nobody was as feared as you. And nobody had the bat speed that you had. No doubt about it. And I don't know if you'll ever get in the Hall of Fame, but people will know listening to this show how good of a player and how great of a player you were, and I'll never stop.
Well, I appreciate that, man, but I promise you I won't lose any sleep.
I know. You'll go on the local park and rec. You'll go on the local park and rec like you did and just show the kids that you still got it.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, that's what I'm doing now. I'm working with the kids, and, you know, I'm really trying to help these kids out and try to help them understand, you know, the game a little bit better, and give them the same opportunity that was afforded to me through Bama High Little League and things like that. So that's what I want to do.
Chef, being in the position that you are, and I'll let you go after this, but since you are in the position of helping younger kids and the momentum of change that is going on in our society right now, how proud are you to be a leader of young men during this period of time?
You know, it's the most refreshing thing I've ever done. You know, it's just like a breath of fresh air. When I see these kids and they looking at me when I'm talking to them, and they want this information, and I'm telling them things that, you know, they're like, you know, we never heard this philosophy before. And I say, well, it's a basic one. You know, the basic information is the best information. You know, the guy that thinks less is the most effective player. The guys that overthink the game, you know, they wind up getting themselves in trouble. So I always try to work on and talk about the mental part of the game with these kids. And that's first and foremost, because, you know, everybody can play the game, but there's a guy that I always tell people, there's a great player and there's a good player. And that great player, I say, and there's two great players standing next to each other. A great player could make another great player just good. And I say, which side do you want to be on? And that's a mentality.
Yeah, and you always were on the side of being great and trying to make the other players on your team better. And I hope one day you do tell the story, Gary, because people don't appreciate how locked in you were. And if they watch video of you, they know that you meant business, and the intensity was there for every pitch that you saw, not only when you were hitting, but when you were playing defense. So hopefully we get the Mamba mentality story from Gary Sheffield one day.
One of these days.
Hey, well, drive safe from Florida, Alabama, Chef. And I love hearing your voice. Thanks for coming on, and hopefully we'll do this again soon.
Absolutely, bud. I appreciate you.
There he goes, the man, Gary Sheffield. If you think that he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, then sorry, you don't know what you're talking about. He's a great man and a great player, no doubt about it. 866-987-2570. Your thoughts on what Gary had to say, and if you want to read his story, you can go to the Players Tribune or follow him on Twitter at Gary Sheffield. He's a guy that definitely is honest with every word that he uses.